You're listening to the More Time, More Profit podcast, the best place for entrepreneurs who are looking to grow past the startup phase of their business, but still need to learn how to free up more time to drive more profit. Now, present these real strategies, your successful business coaches and hosts, Adam John and Grant Muriel.
Welcome to More Time, More Profit, episode number 57. Today's show, we're talking about using cheap surveys to hit your target market with Dan Petrovic. My name is Adam John, and as always, I'm joined by Mr.
Not much, buddy. Imagine you could get a customer to write the exact problems they have for you to sell to them better. This episode is going to run you through exactly that. So jump on before we get into it. Download the process at www.moretimemoreprofit.com/057 for episode 57.
So today we're talking about creating cheap surveys. Now, surveys have been around for a long time, probably as long as business and customer service has been around. They've risen to popularity in the last couple of years in the marketing community by a man by the name of Ryan Levesque, who authored the book Ask. Grant, you and I have found out the hard way that while you think you know your audience, you really don't. As business owners, we come up with great ideas that we think our customers and audiences will love. We spend a lot of time and a lot of money developing products, only for them to fall on deaf ears. We burn through thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, simply because we didn't find our target audience's true problem and set about solving it. Back in episode number 42, we discussed buying personas, and one of the most important steps in that framework was validation. We've all seen the TV show Family Feud, where they ask a question and survey for the results, and I swear to God, I only ever guess 30 to 50% of the answers correct, and the same goes for business. And when my money is on the line, we need to get a much better hit rate. So I'm super pumped to find out how we can get some cheap validation from our target demographic. Grant, your thoughts on this, mate?
Yeah, mate. Look, I couldn't agree more. There have been too many times, account, where I've sat down and asked myself, what is my target audience's biggest problem? If I knew this, I could easily set up marketing campaigns, write sales proposals, set an agenda to a meeting that covers all of these, as well as build a higher priced product because I know exactly what my customers are after and realize issues that they don't even realize they've got until I bring it up. What happens is I consistently fall on my face and usually only have three options, which is create ads or something that targets my assumed audience and hope that I get some leads to learn from, which is extremely time consuming, quite expensive, and it can take a long time to gain fruitful results. Or I go out to current customers, if I have any, and ask them why they chose us and what problems we're now solving for them. And the third part, which is the part that I hate, is I just go to my competitors and steal what they are currently doing, which does not help me differentiate my business, and it only gives me as much value as they have. Fast forward to now, with a lot of different technology that's available, we're able to obtain this information in a matter of weeks without any limitation. We could find key pain points, uncover a hidden demographic, understand the language our potential customers really use, and get to know the inner person that we're selling to. No longer are we playing the guessing game around what customers want, but we're able to hit them harder and deeper than any of our competitors have before. Unfortunately for me, I've never had anybody to walk me through how to set this up or share the secrets that they've used to make this work. But thanks to today's guests, this is no longer the case. So within 20 minutes, you and I are going to be able to grab the insider information and start hitting our competitors where it hurts. So safe to say, my lengthy rant, I'm extremely pumped up for the episode. So today, we've got Dan Petrovic, commonly referred to as Dion or Dan or Mr. Petrovic. So welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
So Dan's a good mate of mine. I've shared quite a few brewskis talking about life, business, and everything this world has to offer. He's the managing director of Dion, which is a SEO agency. He's Australia's number one authority for SEO. And yes, we won't be talking about SEO on this episode. And he's highly regarded as an industry event speaker, speaking over 10 to 20 global events a year, and has been a consistent hit in many, many different countries. As one of the most respected marketers in Australia, and I don't say that lightly, promoting clients as big as Nickelodeon, iSelect, RedSpot, Progressive, he is the man that everyone wants a piece of, and in order for us to set this up, we've had to pencil him in from ages ago. So it's absolute pleasure having you on, mate. So to get started, how did you really sort of begin or get pulled into this idea around having data-backed marketing or data-backed sales that really helps businesses, whether it's yours or your clients, excel above their competitors?
Well, it all started with one particular client who was kind of a competitor to a well-known brand, Airbnb. And this client had a problem that they weren't getting the organic traction from Google. So not many people were finding him in the search results. We analyzed a lot of things and we found the usual list of problems, but I had this suspicion that there was something more to it. So I pretended that I'm the customer of them and looking for accommodation in another location. What I found is the page that was a little bit boring. There was nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with it. I mean, it had the picture of the accommodation, several images, in fact. It had all the relevant information you could get in touch with. There was nothing wrong with the page, but it was just boring. And we all know that Google was faced with the challenge of who do I show first and who's more notable, who's more interesting. And those that have exciting content on their product pages tend to get a lot of traction in the organic results. So we're talking about SEO now, but that's how it all started. So I had a little bit of a think about how do I actually make these pages exciting? And I decided, well, I can't really, because it's just what it is. It's a product, it's an accommodation, and there's nothing more than I can do about it because all the information that could have been provided has been provided already. So I wanted to go, and instead of providing just information, I wanted to provide functionality. So my idea was to suggest to the client to build a little function that maps local restaurants to the proximity of the accommodation and to tell the audience, the person that's landing on this page, hey, this apartment that's for rental is 300 meters from one of the top 10 restaurants in such and such place as voted by locals. So we wanted to use data to enrich the content of the page and auto-generate content by mapping popular locations. So here's the problem. We didn't know what are the popular restaurants in Sydney. We could go and steal a list from here and there, but I didn't trust that data. That's where the survey idea came into place. So what we did, we reviewed several options for collecting data, including SurveyMonkey, and eventually settled on Google Surveys. And we can talk about this a little bit later, but I'd like to highlight the fact that Google Surveys has particularly good quality control in place. That was the point at which I started using survey data. And our primary location where we wanted to start this whole thing off was Sydney. We took a sample of 1,000 people living in Sydney, and we asked them one question: what's the best place to eat in Sydney? And we were hoping to map those answers to each location that our client had available in Sydney and have a unique piece of content that's built based on functionality. To our amazement, the top answer by the respondents surveyed in Sydney was McDonald's. So that kind of, yeah. So that kind of put the spanner in the works, but obviously didn't want to map this to an accommodation listing because the audience would have been like, oh, okay, great. So it's like 500 meters from the nearest McDonald's. So what? I can see that in.
I'm booking.
I can see that in Google Maps, right? I want to know what's the best place to. But those were unexpected and disappointing results at the same time. But silver linings, we used this to our advantage and we created an interesting PR campaign based on that.
At what point did you sit there and say, you know what? Outside of the data that comes back, so you're expecting like down in Melbourne, you got like Vudamon, Ezra's and all these like grand scale, amazing restaurants that you're obviously hoping to get out of people. At what point did you do, was it just one survey or was it many surveys that you said, you know what? This is something that almost every single business should be applying. And there's a way that they can always use this to either improve their sales or their marketing or some part of their business.
The wide variety of uses for this didn't really hit me on a personal level until I realized that while developing a business of my own. One of my hobbies is gardening, in grasses in particular. So I wanted to set up a blog to build up a bit of momentum around ornamental and exotic grasses. And when I was doing that, I realized that there are a lot of weird names surrounding what I do. I mean, does Zosia tenufolia or Zosia matrella or Festuca glauca means anything to anyone?
Nothing.
What are these people actually looking for when they're trying to landscape their fancy new $1 million, $2 million houses in Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane? What do these people look for? So my idea was to target well-off Australians who have 20, 30K to spend on their gardening efforts, and they're looking for something special, not just your usual lawn that people just put in front of their house. So I went back to Google Surveys with a completely different purpose this time. I used it to expand my keyword research. In fact, I did my market research by simply asking people what they would type in. And here's an interesting part. With Google Survey, you can upload an image, show it to your audience, and say, look at this grass. What do you think you would type in. If you saw this graph somewhere on the street, you don't know what it is, what would you type into Google to look for it? And the results were just amazing. Like the keywords that I would never consider were in there, right there in the list. What happened next? I had keywords like fluffy, undulating, lumpy, bumpy. They were describing the look and feel of the grass. They were calling it mossy grass, bubble grass, magic garden, fairy garden, crazy stuff. And none of those keywords were in my content. So you don't always have to have an image. You could state a problem and ask people to tell you what they would search for to find a solution for that problem. And that can open up a lot more scope for your content enrichment, for landing pages, for organic listing targeting, for paid campaigns. Imagine an AdWords campaign or a segment of your campaign completely based on keywords that nobody's ever targeted before. I mean, you're like in competition with nobody.
Yeah.
Imagine how cheap that campaign would be. So that point when it hit home, because it was a project close to me, right? And I realized that for $100, you can do market research with 1,000 people living in Australia. And you can even split them male, female, income levels, parental status, all sorts of things. Or you can survey people in New South Wales versus Queensland. It's really quite powerful and it allows you to get all this data on a cheap.
That's phenomenal. I guess before we jump into it, the one question I've got is if we were to take a 40,000 foot view, do you think that every single business outside of SEO or paid ads, whether they just want to know a little bit more when they're writing a proposal for sales or even marketing campaigns for a radio ad that's going out, do you think that every business could use survey results to improve their conversion from sales, marketing, and even other areas in their business, such as product development?
Absolutely. Every business lives in its own bubble. We are aware of that, but a lot of business owners are not. They use their own terminology, their own internal jargon to refer to things. So that's one thing, kind of like when banks call their credit cards and home loans, they call them products. To the bank, that's a product. To me, it's not a product. To me, it's a credit card. The jargon elimination is one side of it. But another thing is, I think every business should do this before they start a PR campaign or a marketing campaign or billboards and radio and printed stuff or mail drop. Ask people if they're familiar with your brand. Have you ever heard of this, this, and that brand? Or show them your logo and say, is this logo familiar? Does it ring a bell? Or ask them, what do we think we do? And you can get an extraordinary feedback. Like most small business owners, they'll show their new credit card or new brochure to their wife or, you know, and they'll say, oh, yeah, it's nice. If somebody close to you says something is nice, it's not nice. They're being friendly, but they're being nice to you. If you're trying to create a viral piece of content and somebody says, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool, it's not. If somebody close to you says, oh, my God, that is freaking amazing, this is going to be so viral, it might just succeed. So breaking outside the bubble and understanding what people really think. So understanding your brand awareness. So you run one at the beginning and you run one at the end of the campaign. Let's say you've invested $50,000 in billboards. At the end of the week, after you've spent $50,000, you check to see if people's brand recognition has increased in your area where you've been targeting. That's a great way to do before and after the campaign results to see if the brand awareness has kicked in.
I love it.
All right. So what we want to do is we want to pull out a framework for you. So what are the processes or the steps at a very high level to enable you to get the results? So if you started from scratch, what would we do? We talked about the Google form. There might be other tools such as SurveyMonkey, things like that. Are we going to be doing this through Facebook ads and putting our demographics into there? Assuming that we had a business, let's go through the steps from top to bottom, and then people will be able to go into the office tomorrow and start working out how they can do cheap surveys and asking their core demographic the real questions that they need to be answered.
Yeah, so there's really quite a process to it, and the exact number of steps depends on every business. But what I tend to start from is always the data. Before I do anything, before I make any decisions, before I actually build the roadmap and the strategy for myself, because I'm the business owner as well, or any of my clients, I observe the data and see what I can find. So the first stage of the process is collection of data from all available sources. When I have enough, then I try to make sense of that data. I process this data in meaningful ways, which leads to insights. Now, once you have insights, this allows you to make decisions about what you've seen in the data that you've been looking at, which then allows you to prioritize. And prioritizing is basically just removing activities that will not bring benefit and focusing on stuff that will bring the benefit.
Yeah, I love that little process there about the data, insights, and how to prioritize it. So why don't we jump into the Google surveys a bit, and maybe you can give us a better understanding of things from inside there.
Going to Google surveys. So It's surveys.google.com. Once you log in, you will be able to see a button called New Survey. You click on that, and that will take you to a survey setup page. So the first step you do is you give your survey a name. For example, e-commerce annoyances. So now we have a choice between general population and audience on your own website or specific audience panels or Android smart users. I tend to select general population if it's a broad topic. In the targeting options, we have ages. We can select young people, older people, and everything in between. So we've got that selection. We've got the split up by men, women. Then we can choose a country. So the currently available countries are United States, Canada, United Kingdom, Germany, Mexico, Japan, Australia, Brazil, France, and Spain. You can choose between those. I'm choosing Australia right now, and I can choose whether to target the entire country or go by state. So I'm selecting the entire country, Australia, both men and women and all ages. So the next thing is to hit continue. And that takes you to the next screen, which gives you the option of what style of survey you want to run. And the list is long and it gives you a lot of options. And I do have my favorite and I'll talk about that one. So the first option is the single answer. Then you have the two choices with an image, multiple answers with an image. Then you can do a rating scale from 1 to 5, rating scale with text, rating scale with image, open-ended questions. And that's my favorite, open-ended with an image, side-by-side images, menu with image, large image choice. So all these do different things, and it'll make a lot more sense once you log in and start playing with this yourself. You can start playing with, you know, like a $10 budget while you're learning how to use the platform. Now, I mentioned that I use open-ended answers. There's an upside and downside to using open-ended answers. The upside is that it gives really genuine, open, and helpful results, which can lead to discovery.
Just want to jump in and ask a quick question there. How do people actually fill these out? What's the motivation?
So there are two levels of filling out a survey if you're a user. One, you've subscribed to an app called Google Rewards that periodically sends you questions and you answer it and you get Google Play credit, which you can use to buy games and watch movies and stuff like that. So the other side is like a soft paywall, premium content. You have to answer a survey question to get to that article. So those are the two options. So let's say I'm reading an article. I want to read an article. I'm the respondent. And it says, to read more, fill out a survey. I've hit the button and I'm filling out a survey. So it's open-ended. I'm entering my answer. So the difference between showing people 5 choices and they pick an answer and then filling it out is obvious. If you give people answers, they'll pick one. You're kind of planting ideas in their mind. I want completely fresh and new ideas. I don't want them to be biased by what I'm offering. So that's why open-ended is my first choice. Downside of running open-ended survey questions is for the fact that it takes a lot more data processing afterwards. So if you're running like 100 respondents, 100 answers, that it's fine. You can do that manually in Excel. But if you're running, you know, 1,000 or 10,000 respondents, then you might, you know, start using automation when processing this data. What does this mean? Well, for example, some people will say outside, some people will say outdoors, and some people will say not in the house. It means the same thing, but to Google Survey, it'll be a different concept. So it's sometimes useful to group certain items into a semantically related unit. So once you've picked your desired question format, you can go add question. So you at this point have the ability to type your actual question and enter a placeholder text. On the right-hand side, it'll give you a preview text and you can see how it'll appear to your audience. One thing to remember is that while you're doing this, you can also add a qualifying question. So if you want to target somebody in specific, like let's say you want to target plumbers only. You're selling plumbing supplies and you want to target only plumbers. For your first question is, are you a plumber? Yes, no. Those who answer no, get no more questions. If they say yes, then they'll get to the next step. One thing to keep in mind is if you have a qualifying question, you're narrowing audience a lot, your cost per survey, per answer will be a lot higher than just targeting general audience. Just something to keep in mind.
In your experience, does it come with better output if you go and set a qualifying question?
No. The better output is if you target them, but the cost is prohibitive. We're looking at, you know, up to tenfold in price when it comes to that. So I use a little bit of a hack. Sometimes I say, where do you buy your plumbing supplies? If you're not a plumber, just say none or NA. So I instruct the respondents to say, I'm not a plumber, see you later. You can actually do that. Every now and then, the person that actually polices these surveys, and they're very busy people, they might capture it and say, ah, no, you have to use a qualifying question, but a lot of times you can get away with it. So my preference for the cost-saving measure is always to run without a pre-qualifying question. We're looking at a difference between $100 for 1,000 people and $100 for 100 people. It could be a really big difference. So once we've entered our question, you hit confirm, and then on the next screen, you actually see the purchase option. And at that point, you can actually commit to buy a one-off, which is what I do most of the time. Or you can run a periodic survey on a weekly, biweekly, monthly, or quarterly basis. And you can enter how many people you want to survey, and you get the quote. It instantly displays in front of you. If you're happy with the price and if you're happy with the frequency and number of people you wish to survey, you could buy now, wait half an hour, and the beautiful thing, you start seeing responses trickle in. It's really a nice feeling. You know, you wouldn't be standing at a mall harassing people to answer your survey. It's quite intimidating to do something like that. Yet online, you refresh that page and there's like three answers. You refresh the page, 10 answers. You come back to it the next day, it's done. So it can take like a day or two to complete 1,000 people's survey, depending on the question targeting and so forth.
And the accuracy is quite amazing.
Let's talk about accuracy. So why I'm not in particularly in favor of Google or trying to promote their platform, but having been the one that answers survey question, I've noticed a couple of sneaky things that they do. Every now and then, they'll send me a question and ask the same thing. Why do they do that? They'll say, have you got kids? I say, yes. Have you got kids? I say, yes again. Have you got kids? Yes. This is like random, you know, 3 months spaced out, but I've been paying attention to what they're doing. My hypothesis there is that if you answer yes, no, whatever, random, you're not a good respondent. You just punch anything in the answers. They do another quality check thing. In addition to asking you the same question over and over again, they look at your location history if you're on a mobile phone, and they say, which of these places have you visited recently? And they say like, oh, Jurlique, Maya Center, Woolworths. And I go, yep, Woolworths. When did you last visit it? Oh, Monday. So they ask borderline creepy questions like that. They're looking for accuracy and honesty. So if you answer honestly and consistently over time, they keep sending you more and more surveys. Now, if you don't answer honestly or answer inconsistently, they actually stop sending you answers altogether. What happens if you continue answering honestly and consistently? You start seeing things like, how was your experience at Woolworths? What would you do to improve your experience at Woolworths? So this is, I believe, a next level of program where a major corporation can actually pay Google to get more catered survey results and get corporate level information. So several layers of protection, several layers of quality control. And once I saw that, I was very happy and confident that these results are not just made up or guessed. When I do open-ended survey results, I get some beautiful long answers. Every now and then, one in 10, it'll be a really detailed entry. And I'm just trying to imagine, who is this person? Like, they're trying to get to their article. There's this text field that's standing between them and their reward. And they're filling it out leisurely and casually and like a sentence or two. Once I got a whole paragraph of a rant about a certain topic or an issue, and I really appreciated that.
And you can take the keywords out of that and you can sprinkle them in your copy to sound like you're, you know, speak the lingo and you're in the industry. You can use in the keywords for your AdWords and you can use it in your copy for all your billboards and all your advertising and everything like that. Now, I know you recently completed a survey for an e-commerce store. Can you take us through some of the ins and outs of that campaign?
We're retailing products online and we're running a survey around web visibility. We want to find out what pisses people off while they're shopping online. What sort of usability problems really bother people? And this is a real survey I did before this chat. So we've got actual data to share with you today, and I can send you the graph of this. So the top thing that annoys people is ads. I'm thinking, really? What website shows you ads while you're on the website itself? And it came to me, first thing is subscribe to our newsletter. You move your mouse outside the visible website area, it pops up with, why are you leaving? You know, sign up for this and that. There's a special coupon code. So ads and intrusions, like this ads is a grouped answer which expands into a lot more. The survey actually completed today. What I've discovered today is that the most annoying things is ads, but under the ads category, we have any possible intrusion in the browsing experience. So this includes light boxes, pop-ups, little chats at the bottom, you know, how are you doing, blah, 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 that sort of stuff. The second most common annoyance is the site speed. So site is too slow, images are not loading, all sorts of things. Now we've got something that gives us a little bit of an insight as to what really, really annoys people. Now, I've got like a ton of data here in front of me, and I'm seeing under construction message, page freezing. People are referring like to slow stuff as buffering. Some people are annoyed with navigation, hard to navigate. And some are worried about virus. Some are annoyed by YouTube. And I'm thinking, what? YouTube? What annoys you about your browsing experience is YouTube? I'm guessing maybe it's like a autoplay video or something like that. What else do we have? Clickbait. Plugins. Not mobile friendly. There's a lot of that. It's like a whole category. Some people are saying country compatibility. Now we need to think about what this means. Country compatibility. You know, my guess as I'm interpreting this data in real time, I'm thinking showing me American dollars while browsing from Australia. Shipping information is for United States instead of local stuff. So I have 1,000 answers right now in front of me, and they're all saying different things. Of course, there's a percentage of just rubbish. You know, people saying your mama. I get your mama in every single survey. You will not believe this. It's in every single survey I do. Of course, while you're processing your data, you always filter that out. I call them non-answers, and I just chuck them in there so it's not skewing quality of my data.
This is like in Australia, we did census and everyone was Jedis as a religion.
Yep, people taking a piss, yeah.
All right, Grant, I know you've been scribbling away on your notepad frantically, and have you come up with a framework or some points? I know some learnings I got out of this. I didn't even know about Google surveys. I always, you know, the general consensus is you just run Facebook ads with your core demographic and then you send that to a Typeform or a landing page or something like that. So the fact that it's actually just built into Google and you pay a certain amount per click or per survey, that's absolutely fantastic. I think that we can use it for product validation. And another thing that we didn't think of prior to this show was Dan actually said that you can actually use it to create your content. So what's the framework that you've come up with on this one, mate?
So I've taken a little bit of a step back as well, Dan. So I love the examples. I'm thinking more of a business level. So the step one is really going back to basics of what is our desired outcome? You touched on this quite well, Dan, and I've just put a couple more points on it, which is, what's wrong with your business that you need insights for? What's wrong with X, Y, and Z? So is it a problem? Is it demographic? Is there a page? Is there an image? Is there a testimonial? Is there a word? Is there anything else that you can really get it in? The second step is then you want to build your questions and your surveys, right? In Google Survey or complementary tools. So we outlined the location, the gender, the age, so more details around our demographic. But we also want to outline what type of inputs that we have, meaning that they're relevant to exactly what we're trying to get out of people. So Dan always suggested to use an open-ended answer, just so we don't just get yes and no answers. And really, do note that all of these questions are being displayed in apps and websites. So there's going to be some stuff you're going to have to filter out, but Google's pretty good at making sure that all of the information is accurate. Step three is obviously set your budget and your duration or approve it. So you can buy one off, get recurring, usually about 100 people for $1,000, depending on how you go, or and as well as your responses come in basically immediately when you start. And the final part, which Dan really focused heavily on, which is the interpretation of data. So we always have to look for those patterns, understand what the demographic has provided us, and really go in there with no preconceived opinions about what we're expecting to see. So Dan, sort of taking it a little bit of a step back from a marketing perspective and applying it to the whole business, how'd I go in playing back the steps?
Perfect.
Short and sweet. Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today, and we really appreciate your insights. Can you tell everyone where we can go to find out a little bit more about your website, social media, or something that you wish to promote?
Yep. Type in Dan Petrovic or just Dijon, and I'd say to everyone, I'm pretty difficult not to find.
Beautiful. And we'll put all the links in the show notes for people playing along at home. We'll be continuing this conversation over at Facebook. You can go to Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit Group and join in the conversation with us there.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Dan. Don't forget to jump onto iTunes, click subscribe, and enter a review of exactly what you've taken out of this podcast.
That's it from us. We'll catch you the same bat time, the same bat channel next week. It's bye for now.
You've just been listening to More Time, More Profit Podcast. For more info, check out moretimemoreprofit.com. Make sure to tune in at the same time next week for another dose of real-life business strategies.